Okay, call this meeting to order on February 19th here at the Mesquite office for OPD 5. Our agendas are posted at the correct locations.
Yes, sir.
They're all square with the world. Any public comments?
Anything over there, Merlin?
There's nobody in here but me.
Well, you're the most important of all.
I got nothing, Jack.
All right, then. Call for acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, well, it's been moved and seconded. Everybody say aye.
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 What's the word?
Opposed. Opposed.
Any opposed? Okay, what about approval of the minutes of our previous meeting, January 22nd in Overton?
I move we accept the meetings minutes as presented.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a move and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, very good. We got a letter here from CCSD with all of the school district ladies, all eight of them, nine of them, saying thank you to the Board of Trustees for $2,000 community bill roundup to the Virgin Valley High School. Recognize the importance of such contributions are greatly appreciated.
That's nice.
Clark County School District. Still looking for a superintendent.
We'll see what that gets him.
What about an attorney's report?
I don't have anything at this time, Mr. Chairman, unless anyone's got questions.
Attorney. Okay, I guess we're going to manage the report, Mr. Cooper.
All right. Stephen, are you going to handle the admin report?
That's the plan.
Well, let's have TU really up cool. Then.
You want me to run the computer for you?
Hey, you're running it. This is your chance.
She's been multi-trained.
All right. Okay, so we have the February cybersecurity report. So to start off, we did our cybersecurity training on physical security and social engineering. We had 95% people complete that. Oh, I need a double. I heard someone come in. Just make sure it wasn't him.
There's Dale.
Dale, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Here, let me share the screen. You came just in time.
Welcome, Mr. Rust.
Thank you. I'm way over my head technology-wise, but... Here I am.
You're here.
Well, I'd say you did well. You're here.
It's a miracle.
Okay, Mr. Brown is reporting to us on technology.
And I'm late because I was trying to set up a new printer. So
today
is technology day.
Oh, very good.
Good for you.
You need Stephen there with you.
No, if he can do printers, he can take that part off. I have a war with him every now and then, once or twice a year. All right, so I need
Mike to come help me.
There you go. So we just went over the cybersecurity training. We had 95% complete that training in January. For our internal phishing results, we did have one clicker.
Clicker.
But they got more training, so hopefully next time they'll be scared. The end goal is just basically scare as many people as possible that they just don't click on anything. As far as our email and spam, we did about 4,200 emails sent out, and 2,500 of that was spam.
Wow.
Make sure I didn't skip it. Okay. So here's a little graph of the firewall blocks by country. Netherlands, Bulgaria, and the United Kingdom were the top ones. And a little bit of Russia there. So Poland's kind of interesting. I'm not sure the reason why, but, you know, we block them.
Yeah. Should we send a letter
from the U.S. try to send scams?
They try, but
they don't make the
weed. So this is a full block that we basically anything outside of the country, and Canada also, which doesn't come. It's not too bad. Every now and then we'll get a couple people that can't get our website that are our customers, but that's more than maybe five I've had since I've implemented this for 5 years.
So after all this tariff stuff, we might have to start blocking Canadians too.
Yeah. And we don't have to worry about Morgan Stanley, where they're based in Canada. So they are doing fine, though. We didn't block them all the way. Okay, as far as our server's uptime was 100%, which is always good. And as far as our backups and restore, we are at 100% for this month, which has been awesome. We got new hardware for that, which has drastically helped that. We'll be putting in a direct fiber to that, so that'll secure it even more. So it'll have its own connection to the backup, and it'll be even faster. So it's awesome seeing that 100%. There was some time there it was difficult to get there. So the ISAC, which is the emails that we receive that notifies us of different things that are going on, cyber and also theft, we had about 83 of those emails come in. A lot of still physical attack, that's a big one. We usually talk about that every single time. There have been a few social engineering, so phishing attacks, we've seen a few of those. And as far as cyber is, we have VMware and SonicWall. VMware is a product that we use, but luckily it was part of the VMware that we don't use. So we were good on that, but we did due diligence and make sure that we were safe.
Are these nationwide or just in our...
So the ISAC is primary, the electrical information. So this one's more for the electrical sector. We do provide some couple other ones, which is CISTA, but that would be the whole United States, and that one gets pretty heavy. I probably get 2 to 3 easy a day on that. But most of the time they're sharing. The biggest thing you'll see notice is those ones, they won't talk about copper theft and stuff like that, which is really important for us to know.
Stephen, what is this ballistic damage? That's gunshot?
Yes. And that's it, unless you have any questions.
You did a fantastic job.
I tried. I did the mustache just so I can look like Scott.
Really?
I hope that one's fake, too.
Did you grow it overnight?
I just about. I do really good. My hair doesn't do very good, but this, for some reason, does.
At least grab me the controller.
Okay, Randall, if you'll give us the engineering report, please.
Okay, the Tortoise to Gila 138 line, we're projected to start that in April. Most of our materials are scheduled. The last material that we're looking for are insulators, and they're supposed to be here at the end of March. And we've had our purchasing agent check up on those, and they're still on schedule. So that we should break ground on that. And
so are those poles out there on the along the line there, is that for that project?
Yeah, we're staging all those out.
That's
ahead.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Long drive switch yard. I don't have pictures of foundation because I've shown you hundreds of pictures of foundations, and I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, they started 2 weeks ago. There's probably 30 foundations in there, and they've completed the last ones today. So those are all ready for the contractor in about 3 weeks to start standing steel. In the meantime, they'll be working on ground grid and conduit. The Raptor 138 line, they started the foundations today, and they started drilling those. And those are going to take about 7 to 8 weeks to complete. They have about almost 22 foundations going from Long Drive down to Raptor. Let's see. This is a report I reported last month on the foundations on the new three-pole structure for RG1 line. And this is the contractor putting the poles on the foundations. And you can still see the wood structures there on the right-hand side. Look, I'm going to use the pointer, I think.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, right there, you can see the wood.
Show me how to use that.
Hey, Don't interfere with my presentation, please. These are the bases. That's the poles finished, and then they're starting to wreck out the wood structures here on the right side there.
So they got all that conductor moved up, Randall?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. You'll see, I'll show you one last picture here that'll show everything moved up there. So we have everything there. Kevin, I think, is going to kind of report on that progress there. But RG1 line is all tied in now.
So they can take the wood poles out.
Yeah, all the wood poles. I'm going to do the pointer again.
Cool.
Right there. They're all gone. Let's see. I have one. Oh, this picture here is a great picture showing our future projects that we're still working on. So you can see right in there is the new 60 MVA 230-69 transformer. And then here, this open area is where the extended ring bus is going to go to bring in, to take the 230 to that 69 bay. And those projects are going to start probably in a couple weeks.
Did our drone take this picture?
They what?
Did our drone take this picture?
Yes.
That's good.
Do you want me to report on that next time?
No, I just like that. Okay. It's a good picture.
We do have our new drone, and the report was it worked really well. It lands easier, and it flies. Our flight time has been tripled. So on the batteries, the newer drones have longer life, so we can stay in the air longer. Go to my next slide, the spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. So who's the Wright brothers on that?
Yes. Yeah, we're trying to get some others to join the group, but we haven't yet.
Still Once my schooling is done, I'm going to pick that up.
Oh, very good.
And actually, our new drone, it can be manned by one person now. We just need to have a lookout person, but one person control everything now on this new drone. Anyway, this is my annual report on solar installs, rooftop solars. So if you look down here at the very bottom, would be the new installs for 2024. We had about 38 total. That's in red there. And you can kind of see we kind of peaked in 2019 or 2022 with 88, and we've slowly had a decline. It'll be interesting with the rate increase that we had, see if that number bumps up in 2025. Usually the solar sales guys, when they hear of increases, they send their people out hunting potential customers. So it'll be interesting to see over the next 11 months where that goes. And that is all I have to report. If you have any questions.
So we have 533 right
total,
now?
Total, yes, 533 total. Thanks, Stephen.
Welcome. Okay, thank you, Randall. Kyle.
Turn that on and off real quick. IT fix for everything, right?
Yep.
Okay, month of February for line operations. Outages, we had 4 planned outages and 5 unplanned outages, so pretty minute in relation. We had for unplanned outages, the big one there, 586 customers. It's Moapa. I think I reported on it last month because it was Chad was here, and it was right before last board meeting. It just happened to be when we had all the circuits tied together in Glendale and Moapa area for some maintenance that was going on. So when that outage happened, it took out a lot more people than normal. And then with the geography of Moapa and Glendale area, it takes a lot more time to patrol those lines. And so that's why that one stands out substantially. A couple other blown fuses in there, but nothing really else that stands out. Service installations for the month of January. Dinosaur had 23 residential, Canyon Crest 5. These are both in the Mesquite area. Dinosaur is Pulte area. Canyon Crest is up towards the dump. Pultsfer down near Casablanca. And then Logandale, Overton, Whipple, and Overton. Just a couple there in those areas. So a lot in Dinosaur for the month. And then by year relation, you know, we got 2025 here. We had 32 this last month, and then it shows what we were at for 24, 23, 22, 21. So it's kind of looking at just January as a snapshot. It was substantially lower, but, you know, hard to get a good judge on that because developers are in the ebbs and flows of their builds. Like, who's to say that next month we won't double that? But gives you a good look at that there. Some of the projects the men have been working on, this is a Mesquite house fire out in Bunkerville. Well, it was actually an RV that burnt. The men restored that the following day. It was inaccessible that night, so the men went back in the next day, stood a new pole, reestablished the home that was there. The RV obviously was lost. The switch on the right there, it's kind of hard to get a good picture of the First South and Thistle project that's going on. You might have saw it on Facebook that Vernon wrote a good article about that, but it's we're redoing that trunk line through that area out of Mesquite substation down First South towards the Mesquite post office, and then south of there. It's an area that was found to be needed some upgrades, and so our men are doing a lot of work in that area, upgrading that, setting the facilities, and then they'll be in there for the next few weeks, pull wire, terminating, connecting the rest of the docks. Good there. Overton, kind of similar situation over there, out of Overton substation, doing an overhead to underground project, taking it around that corner by La Fonda's and by the old water hole, and then towards the tracks through there, taking that overhead out of the back of properties, through the middle of properties, and taking it underground through here. So this is the part where our men helped contractors. We set the vaults, but we had contractors digging on the conduit. So in unison, we work together on that, and it's progressing nicely. It's going to be a heck of a project to get done. It'll change that area right through there. And then I report, it seems like we report on the same things a lot of times, but this is part of the work for the transmission line up on the Mesa. You've seen the men probably working up there as you've been traveling back and forth, but this is a pole they set. They're cutting in a double dead end up here, getting ready to go underground. This is the underground facilities, to go for a couple spans and back up the pole, just all in preps for that transmission line. And these men here, they're taking the time to do it. It's de-energized on both sides of this, but they're working it as if it's energized, getting that experience for these young linemen and young apprentices there. So it's been a great project. And then safety meeting for the month of January, we had emergency action plan and fire extinguishers was our topic, and we had a great attendance as well. Both valleys, we had a meetings held in both valleys. The majority of the folks make it to the Overton one, but those that can't make it end up having the meeting here in the afternoon. So,
wow, I didn't realize you had that many people attend.
We have a great attendance, and as we compare it, part of the NREA best practices that we're going to go to is one of the topics is talking about safety meeting. You can see it's a struggle for other companies to get buy-in and attendance for the entire company, and you can see here we don't have that problem. And that's great leadership that's been posed, like, you know, you give us the ability to be there, and we're going to be there. So it's fantastic. Any questions? Any thoughts?
I kind of have a question on the, coming back to last month on that accident that we had. I know we talked a little bit about some of the policy procedures and maybe tagging lines from transformer to transformer, XYZ.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that you have something in place that it's, we have ongoing, I guess, or following back to maybe some of the things that weren't done in the past that we're trying to catch up to.
Yeah, so we have a good plan going forward. In fact, tomorrow we're traveling to NV Energy to go tour not only job sites that are in progress, but also their training yard back at their warehouse to see their process. And we have a good understanding, a good idea of what we need to do, and we're working towards getting that implemented, but we're double-checking with our neighbors first to make sure we're on the right page going forward. So that's kind of where we're at. We know as a team, and we've already discussed as a team, that here in the very near future, we're going to have a big bite to chew here, and we're going to get to it and get it all tagged correctly and get it all up to speed.
So Lisa and I talked about this morning, that we are going to put together a policy that incorporates all the things that they've found that need to be done, and we should be able to have that to you in the March or April board meetings.
Kind of step that up, freshen that whole policy up of what to do, what you're, yeah.
So when that policy's finished, that'll be the time, like, that practice will start?
They're making changes already, but that'll just provide it in written form so that we can hold everybody to that standard.
Re-solidify.
So they can understand it.
I like it.
And then I take it you probably give us periodic reports of how many are completed and all that sort of stuff. If you have a big plan, it may take months or a year or something to complete, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You get periodic reports on it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kyle. Kevin Hansen, would you like to tell us about SubOps?
Okay. So let's see what I got from my report today. So the SubOps crew has been working on getting capacitor banks online. This is a new controller from Schweitzer Engineering, and it goes off of wireless sensors down into this controller. And what we're doing with this is through our Aclara system, our new Aclara RF system, we're going to mount a piece of equipment in there that uses our already existing technology and bounces that back to SCADA for us. So they're getting ready for this. Steven's been working with on the IT department to get the communications tied in back to that system. And then Aclara is going to be here on March 4th to actually tie that in and get this one right here online so that we can be able to see all of this back into SCADA. And this is the screen. So Shane took a wireless cell modem out there and installed it so we can get some values back. But this is actually it. You can see it's closed. This is our power factor when it's closed and the KVAR. I don't know if it means anything to you guys, but it does to us. We know how much capacity, how many capacitors could close in by that KVAR, and that'll bring all that back. And here we can put it in SCADA and auto, manual, open and close it from here. Once it's in auto, those sensors will come back and feed information into it. It'll open and close as it's needed. So it'll be an automating system. And then once the whole system's online, the downstream meters will be able to feed information back to SCADA and say, hey, I'm at this voltage, I'm at this power factor. And it'll feed into the SCADA system. The SCADA system will be able to turn these on and off as needed from downstream meters. So that's eventually the goal, is to have these in place to where they're automated through downstream meters. So it's a lot better system. Keep us right where we should be in voltage and power factor. So I saw these guys out switching the other day. So I was up in Mike's office. I took a picture of them without them noticing. Anyway, SD Myers has been in our substations. They've been processing oil on some transformers. There's 9 of them in there that we decided needed oil processing. Each one of these transformers has to be isolated out when they come in to do their work. And so these guys have been out doing a lot of switching in the last couple of weeks to get ready for this process to happen. When it's all said and done, those 9 transformers will be in an acceptable condition again. Right now, we've got a few of them that are iffy. And once they process hot oil, process that oil, they'll be back in good. The oil will be back in good condition. So,
how come we're not doing those?
It. Let me see. I got the slide.
We don't have them.
Because of that right there.
So we have a unit that will do small ones or something?
We have a unit that will filter press. We don't have a unit that will actually heat up the oil to...
Different process.
Yeah, it's a different process. And that truck is way more than what we want to spend for the 9 that we do every 5 years or so.
Right.
It's a lot of money.
Okay.
Just for the truck. It's a lot of money for these guys to come in, but they bring in trucks, trailers, generators, all kinds of stuff. Some key factors that we look at, and I don't mean to give you guys a big lesson on oil process or oil transformer oil, but the IFT, which is basically that's how permeable the oil is to water and stuff like that, any contaminants. That interfacial tension, when it gets below 28, you start to get nervous. When it gets down to 25, you're going to have problems. And so this transformer right here, it needed hot oil processing to get that oil back into a good state once again. And I think this was probably, we had, in this transformer, we had a couple of large through faults into it, and it jumped up some of the dissolved gases to a level that needed to be dropped back down again to get it back into good shape. So this is another transformer. You see the Furans. The Furans is Furans tells you how good the paper is in the transformer. So the insulating paper around the coils, they're winded with paper. And as that paper ages, that Furan level will climb. This one also had some pretty high gases. You'll notice acetylene, it's only a 1, and they flagged it. So what acetylene means is it had an arc. It had a hard enough fault through that transformer where it's got something arcing inside. That's what acetylene means. A few of these other gases that we look at, hydrogen's 1. The carbons is paper. That's our paper. These 3 gases right here are different types. There's through faults, arcing, heating, excessive heating in the transformer. All of those gases tell a story. And what we're trying to do with this is we're trying to reset all of these numbers back to a level where we can trend it and watch it a little closer.
Are they just processing, getting the contaminants out, or is there there's an arcing or something? Are they going to do something that will prevent that?
We haven't seen any arcing in the transformer. We think these are through faults. So there's a large fault on the other side of the transformer that hit it hard enough.
Oh, okay. Not something inside.
Yeah, not something inside. We haven't seen that kind of action. You see that acetylene climb real high, shut that transformer down. There's something going on inside of it. We've had that happen too.
That'll be borne out too. Once they do the gas removal, they'll do these tests again next year. And if that acetylene's down, it means that everything's good, that it was a pass through. So Kevin monitors these every year.
Yeah, I keep a close eye on this stuff. They're also putting a anti-inhibitor in there, so it inhibits moisture into the oil, and so that helps that transformer even more, just to stay a little bit cleaner, a little bit that it keeps the levels up better. This is actually up here, this big truck they hook up to it, and they process all that oil through that truck, heat it up to a certain temperature so it pulls all that moisture out. They use a special chemical, diatomaceous earth or something like that. They run this all through, and it cleans out oil and makes it nice and almost freshly new again. In this one, I don't know, Rich, if you remember this transformer, it had a hole in the bladder.
Vaguely.
I remember.
So these guys are changing that bladder out. It's one of the things that we have. This transformer actually had good samples, but we knew it had a hole in the bladder, and these guys were coming on site. So we thought we will have them change that bladder out while they're at it, because that's what they do, is this kind of stuff. So we had them change that bladder out. It's not done yet, but they unhook it up here on top and take this off, and there's hooks. This just huge bladder hangs from these hooks. And what they do is they'll inflate that bladder a little bit, and then they'll completely surround it in oil. And so what the bladder does is when the oil expands and contracts, it pushes that bladder in and out and gives it, so it never touches the outside atmosphere. And what we had was a hole in that bladder. And so we had desiccant canisters on there, so it kept the moisture out of the oil. But we wanted to have that replaced. And Virginia was good enough to send a new one to us, and so that's what they're doing, is they're putting in that new one that Virginia sent to us. So.
Another plug for Virginia.
Oh, Melissa, come on.
This is more pictures of some line building. You know, they're stringing this line over to tie in that regarder number 1 line on that 230 ring bus of Tortoise. Randall's pictures were a lot better. I should have stole some from him, but these are the ones that I took. You can see how tall those towers are. It's pretty neat. That's all I have, unless you guys have questions for me.
I do have a question.
Okay.
You mentioned the paper disintegrating. I thought that it would last a long, long paper. It's supposed to last 20, 30 years, isn't it?
These transformers are 30 plus years.
Oh, okay.
they're starting to see the age of the paper starting to come around. So.
Yeah, that Maloney's probably 50.
Is it going to be that old?
Well, I remember installing it 30 years ago, and it was used when we bought it.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm keeping a close eye on that Maloney. I don't know if it's going to last much longer. I keep getting some gas levels in it that I don't like.
So when I first started into substation maintenance many years ago, I went to an S.D. Myers class. This was probably around 1992. And they were promoting their techniques as a way to get 50 years out of your transformers. And I think that by sticking with them and the practices that they've suggested, we're seeing an improvement in our testing and what we get out of our transformers. So it's been really good for us. So it's worked.
Those three at Tortoise that we bought from NV Energy, those are the other three that I'm keeping a close eye on. They're doing okay. I say okay, we'll see.
Yeah, two of those were installed in 63 and then another one when that Timbayou mine came on, Lincoln County had to install Bay 3.
Yeah.
So at what point do you replace them to avoid the future outage versus
that point of that regard?
That's one.
Well, we're adding that 60 MVA transformer to help protect that against these going out.
Yeah, that new 60 will. Yeah,
but your testing is what gives you an indication of when those units start to fail. You'll start to see the gas build up, or the paper break down, whichever happens. And so that's why Kevin and his guys keep a close eye on that, do testing periodically to make sure that those stay in acceptable ranges.
And this will give us a good baseline so we can trim that.
And do we have one in storage kind of as a backup in case one of these go down? Or
the bad thing about transformers is if you don't keep it energized, the water migrates to the paper.
Gotcha.
Paper deteriorates, that transformer that sits without being energized is
no good.
The paper we have
to. So we've had such issues with supply and demand. Mm-hmm. If we lose one of these older transformers, or even if you say, okay, it looks like I'm worried about this one real bad. Are we 5 years out, or are they quicker to get one of these transformers?
So it just got back bids to change the two out in Mesquite Southern Arrowhead substation. And they came back as a year, believe it or not, for those transformers. So it's not as bad as it was, but it's still a long ways out.
And if we lose one for whatever reason, I assume we've got enough redundancy that we can cover until we can get a new one in.
Yeah, our policy is not to run those transformers any harder than 70% so that we have resources to pool in case we do have one fail.
And then we've also, through our vulnerability assessment, looked at where our weakness is, and Kevin has been preparing orders to get the transformers in where we see we may need them in the coming years.
But give them the prices so that, because it seems as though it would be an easy fix to plunk us a transformer just in case.
Just get a new one.
So just in case.
They're right around $1.3 million for the one that we need. We need three of those at $1.3 million.
Those are the small ones.
Those are the small ones. The big one at Tortoise came in at $4
million. Oh, my goodness.
And what's the one at Tortoise is 3 to 5 years out. The big one. So
it's hard to have the insurance of a $4.5 million transformer sitting waiting for what could be 2 years, 10 years, you don't know. But we want to be proactive in ensuring that we're doing the testing so that when we get to the point that says we know we need to change it in the next 2 years, we have it on order.
So when these new, if some of these big projects we've heard about wind up coming here, there's big dollar signs just for that infrastructure.
And significant time involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So does the Gila sub, does it have the transformers already in there?
It's just a switchyard. There's no transformers there. Someday there might be, but not yet.
And same with long drive. It's just a switchyard. There's no transformers.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. We've told all the developers it's going to be a 3 to 5 year build, so they're all aware of the timing to build infrastructure for them.
You know, I was looking at the pictures at Tortoise, that far west bay, there's a transformer sitting on that. What is that transformer?
That's rental income.
Yeah. So the solar developer was going to build that facility out on the reservation, and they had their transformer ordered. It came in. They didn't have a place to put it, so we're renting them that space.
Okay. I just saw it in the picture sitting there, and was wondering if that was a backup of ours. Okay.
If we have to, we'll commandeer it, but right now we're just holding it. Okay, Jonathan, let's go to you, and you can tell us what's going on with the finances.
All righty. Be glad to. Before we dive into the statements, I just want to give a little update of what's going on in the finance department. We started our 2024 financial audit back in December. The auditors came out, physically did a count of the inventory. They're scheduled to come tomorrow in-house, and they're going to be there tomorrow and also on the 27th. At Safen and Buckner. They are anticipating presenting the audit report next board meeting. So our staff has been working diligently and hard over the past, since December and before that, but recently, the last few weeks, and we're going to continue working on that to get that done and accurate and done on time. So, Before we start in the numbers here, just want to report and remind everybody that this is it's a new year, 2025, and we have a new power contract with Tenasca. This is the first month that we're reporting on it, and also our first month where we're reporting our customer rate increase. So keep that in mind, and also 2025, our financial statements are going to look a lot different than they looked in 2024. With the increased power cost with Tenasca, we decided as a board and as a power district to absorb and share a big portion of those costs instead of passing that increased cost down to our customers. So with that, we're going to have, as we remember, our margins aren't going to be what they were in the past, and specifically in 2024 and 2023.
It is shocking to see the cost of power go from $2 million to $3.6 million, though.
Yes. Yes, it is.
We went from $44.35 a megawatt to $87.70 a megawatt in a day.
Dramatic, right?
Yes. So we keep that in mind, and we're monitoring that, and here it's a good visual and lets us all know that this is real and it's happening and it's going on. So on our line one, on the far right, our operating revenue for January was $4,504,000, and that was an increase from January of 2024. Of around $400,000. Our line three cost of purchase power, as mentioned, $3,666,000. That's our main contributing factor to our line 20 total cost of electric service of $5,146,000. Our line 22 interest received on investments was $93,000. And then our line 29 total margins, we're reporting a loss of $548,000. So if you look at our line 29, column C, we had projected a loss of $278,000 for January. With that projection, as we discussed, our Tenasca bill is close to double what our previous power contract was, and also the first 6 months of this year, as a reminder, we don't have the solar project, so we will be receiving solar power, which will be significantly lower than the in our purchase power agreement with Tenasca. So these first 6 months, they're going to be, our costs, our power costs are going to be higher than any of the remaining 36 months or longer if we renew the contract with Tenasca because of that.
Any idea what would see that $3.6 million drop to if the solar was up?
So I didn't do quite the math, but with this 3.66, that does include, that's actually an estimate from Tenasca also. We haven't received the final bill from them yet, and that also includes an estimate from MP Energy, our transmission charge. We don't have that in there also. But we were, with our hydropower from Colorado River Commission and with the solar, that is going to cover around 36% of our load, and that's what we're anticipating. And then the remainder will go to Tenasca. And I didn't run the math, Melissa, do you?
It's $2 million for the first 6 months. We'll save $2 million in 2026 by having those 6 months in of solar.
Okay. Yeah, but still the loss, $500,000 for a month.
Mm-hmm. Is that because it wasn't cold enough?
Can I just contribute just for a minute? One of the things that when we made, and Jonathan touched on this, but when we made the strategic decision that we were going to reduce our margins, that first and foremost does not mean that we meant that we were going to have a loss every month. But one of the decisions that we did make in that rate increase is that we were going to put all of the increase on the energy cost. Energy cost is variable. So the more you sell, the more you make. What we will see in these first 3 to 4 months, with it being the most expensive time of our contract, and it's the most expensive time of our company, to be honest, when we get to June, July, August, September, those are the months that we will have the most margins. The more we sell, the more we make up. So I want to warn you that this is a little bit elevated of a loss than what we had anticipated, and I tie that almost 100% back to the fact that it was our very first month with Tenasca. They didn't optimize our hydro in the way that we always have because they're just trying to get their feet on the ground with scheduling. We went through the exact same thing with Morgan Stanley when they started doing our scheduling as well. So we have a meeting with Tenasca tomorrow, and we're going to encourage them to get that dialed in as quickly as possible and optimize that hydro. But also, we want to prepare you guys that for the next few months, we're going to see our not normal margins. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be a loss of this size every month, but when you have the variability of the rate is on your power sales, it the more you sell, the more you make. And so this was a lower month. That's a part of it.
That's why you're saying you'll make it up in the summer, because the sales are obviously going to be higher. So
correct.
You kind of offset that.
Sales correct. Higher and costs lower because we add the solar.
Sure. Right. Yes, and then solar comes on as well. So we have been in talks with CFC, who did our cost of service study. They're also helping us to closely monitor this. I just had a call with them today to go over things, because they too want to see how things are going to flesh out. One of the other things that happens with a rate increase, and it is indicative of every rate increase, is that conservation happens. When you tell somebody that their bill is going to go up, they become more conscious of their usage. Now, we had good sales, but I think that we need to just, I want to prepare you guys that our financials are going to be a little bit different. By about $5 to $6 million is what we anticipated reducing them, and these first few months are going to be different. So if you're mad at anybody about that, don't be mad at Jonathan. It was me, and I'll take those lumps for that. But I want you to know that we are monitoring that closely. And again, when Jonathan is presenting these to you, he's dealing with an estimate on both power cost and on, well, on the Tenasca portion of the power cost and on the transmission from NV Energy. That could vary by $200,000, and we're back to what we anticipated. It could be a little bit higher. We have to wait until those bills flush out. But again, it's our very first month with Tenasca. They're getting everything dialed in as well, and I do think that they are going to get better.
This optimizing thing with the hydro, Is that, like, it sounds like they screwed some stuff up.
No, they did not screw up anything. So what we have is we have Parker Davis layoff that is already allocated to us that was factored into our projections with Tenasca.
Okay.
In addition to that, you can reserve what is called WRP and WRF, replacement Western Replacement Power or Western Replacement Firming?
Yes.
Power. We can elect to take those in certain hours when it is of benefit to us. For the month of January, Tenasca asked that we not take any of that so that they could get an idea of our true load and what they needed for scheduling. I sent them an email, and like I said, we have a conference with them tomorrow that we're going to talk about. You have to optimize every hour of hydro that you possibly can for us. And again, we had the exact same thing when Morgan Stanley took over for us. It takes a little bit for them to get the, I don't know if algorithm is the right word, but the feel of the usage hour by hour and exactly what should be scheduled for when. So I do think that they're going to dial it in.
Will that be a significant change you anticipate?
I think it will be better. I don't think it's $500,000 by any means. But we anticipated that we were going to have a $278,000 loss for this month.
Mm-hmm.
And it is $500,000, so we've got about a $300,000 difference or $250,000 mm-hmm. difference. But some of that could be because of estimating as well.
What is our estimated margin for the year supposed to be now? We had $12 million before, I think.
$5.6
million. So we're going to be able to overcome all these losses and make $5 million net at the end of the year?
Well, that's what is anticipated, yes.
I sure hope so. Or we'll have to look at the base charge again.
Yes, sir, we will.
12 minutes. 12 minutes into the meeting.
Always come back.
Oh, they're making live bets.
You know, you're right, though, with your concern, and we understand that, too. And there's, you know, there are things that we're prepared to do if we have to. We might have to come back to you and say, we're going to punt a couple of projects back a few months or things like that. We have the tools in place where we can make some adjustments, but we anticipate that it's going to come back. If we don't see it coming back, then we're going to take the steps that we need to make sure that everything's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I hate to see us cut necessary projects.
Oh, me too.
Money. I'd much rather go through a rate increase. We saw almost nothing from objections to rate increase we have, and this doesn't seem like we need a huge one to compensate for this.
Yeah, yeah.
What I want to avoid is the knee-jerk reaction for us to talk about additional rate increases in the very first month. If we get to, we're monitoring it closely and we have CFC monitoring it as well. If we get a few months into this and it looks like it might not pan out, we maybe do come back and talk about raising the base charge by $1. We maybe do talk about energy. But I don't want that to be the knee-jerk reaction. We know that this first quarter, or at least the first six months is going to be tight. We know the first quarter is going to be the worst. Let's not panic in the first quarter. Let's get through into the summer and then start making some of those decisions. Okay.
Sorry, so you're thinking getting through the summer, seeing what the solar comes in at, kind of do an average of that. So really, 9-10 month mark is probably going to be your threshold of where you're at.
Yes.
Really.
Yes. Yes. And then at that point, we make a decision. We want to have, right now, we are anticipating a $5.6 million margin. We want to keep our margin at $4.5 million at a bare minimum, because that is the capital project expenditures that we have for 2026. If
Nervous? Is it $4 million, $4.2? When do you start getting, it's like, hey, you know what? We may need to have an executive session. I don't know. I mean, I'm just curious. What was that threshold?
I want to keep a $5 million margin.
So write it, give or take five.
But I think if if we said for 2025, because the first quarter was a little bit rougher and we went down to 4.5, but we feel that 2026 is going to help us recover from that, we would make no changes.
Yeah.
If we get far enough into the year that we're like, it's tighter than what we feel comfortable and we're going to have to cut something key in the 2026 capital budget, we have no choice but to raise rates. Yeah, and we have the authority to do that. That's one of the benefits for us. Now, that's harder on you guys, but it's the thing that we have the ability to do.
You know what's interesting? I've talked to several people since January and this rate increase came in. You know what they said? I didn't know it started already.
Hardly noticed it.
Because a lot of those guys are automatic bill pay. They didn't even notice it went up 30, 40 bucks or whatever it was. I'm not saying everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority I was talking to didn't realize it actually kicked in already. They knew it was coming. They didn't know when.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, everybody has different spectrums of household income, but it is kind of interesting that they didn't even notice much.
Mm-hmm. The key is going to be the solar when that kicks in, because we're paying 34 cents kilowatt hour for that instead of 88.
Yeah.
And so that gives us such a profit margin for that.
Yes.
Well, that's that 9-10th month market.
Yeah.
Is the hydro thing, is it on, like, firm ground, or is it tenuous? I mean, can that go away?
We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's a good lead-in to my report.
With the solar, real quick, I know we have contractual contingencies in place, but are they on time? Are they going to be
according to them,
July 1st? Okay.
According to them, in January, yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right, Jonathan, take us home.
Okay. All right, our balance sheet, our line 5 net utility plant increased from 24 December of around $1.8 million, so our total net value is $141,740,000. We have our line 8 investments and associated organizations, which is our patronage capital. We have our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 materials and supplies, and our total line 29 assets for OBD is $185,459,000. And on our liability side, our total margins and equities is at $126,900,000. And we have our line 43 total long-term debt, line 48 accounts payable, and again, our total liabilities and equities on line 57 is $184,459,000. Our cash held in our checking accounts is represented here in detail. Our month ending balance is $3,234,000. Our Morton account closed with a value of $24,188,000, and our Goldman account closed the value of $627,450. Our securities held in our Morton account are displayed by the pie chart on top by security type, and then by security duration on the bar graph down below. Number of customers for OPD as of January 31st, 2025, 18,780, which actually decreased by 2 from December. In the prior year, we had a few months where we only had a single-digit climbs. We didn't have any that were declined, but that's a net number, and usually when it's a timing issue, and usually when it's low like that, either the prior month was high or the next subsequent month was high.
Isn't that the first time we've ever lost?
No.
In the recent time?
Maybe history. Not in 2024.
So 2024, we didn't report any loss. We had the smallest one in 2024 was an increase of 4. But I didn't go back and look at 2023. But we averaged.
Pretty unusual, though, to have a loss.
In a month, we've seen it here and again. On a year, I think it's only happened once, maybe twice, that we've always grown every year. But in a month, we've seen negatives before.
Now it's 3 times.
And last year we averaged, it was right under 43 customers a month that we increased. So that was the average. Mm-hmm. 24. Down at the bottom we have our financial reporting ratios, our modified debt service coverage with estimates through the end of the year is 1.85. Our equity as a percentage of assets is 68.88%. And our times interest earned ratio is negative 2.85. And again, the MBSC is an estimate through the end of the year, but the tier is just taken into effect year to date, which is just this month. And so that's why this is, that's why that's a negative number, because we had reported a loss for this month. And then there was a request that we went over these, a refresher on what these mean, why we report them, what they tell us. So this is our activity again for January of 2025. And for a modified debt service coverage, again, this is what we reported. Our goal, that's what our goal is. Our median, the average by other utility size is 1.93, and the minimum is 1.35. So that minimum is set by CFC. So the main reason that we report these, we monitor these, we use these, is for our lending with CFC, and also to determine what our financial health is for the power district. But this is according to our debt covenants. CFC requires us a minimum of 1.35, and that's actually an average, or not necessarily an average, but we have to meet that at least once out of a three-year period. So an average of a year, we have to meet that.
So this month is in, doesn't make any difference. It's the whole year that we really count.
Yeah, yeah. So what the modified debt service coverage is modified. The M is that the margins, when we're looking at our margins, we back out the non-cash margins, which is our depreciation and our capital credits. So then we take what our margins are and we divide those by our debt service coverage with, and we loan exclusively through CFC. So that's the ratio. So we take our total principal and interest for the year, and we take our total margins, modify margins, and divide that by our total principal and interest. So a ratio of one would indicate that our margins are generating only enough cash to cover the principal and interest payments on its long-term debt. So everything above one indicates that we have more in our margins to pay than just for our debt service coverage. Last year, our averages were in the two, it was on average, I think, about around just under three. So that's what the modified debt service coverage ratio is. Equity as a percentage of assets. So ours, this is what we reported, the minimum is 39.5, our goal is 57, and then the average by utility size is 45. So CFC, this minimum here is the reason why we have that is CFC gives us a discounted rate on our lending if we meet that minimum. And so that's what we're trying to meet. So basically that's the percentage equity level as a percentage of assets measures the district's consumers have financed plant and other assets with their own funds as distinguished from assets that were financed with borrowed capital. So essentially, if we use our margins to fund our growth and infrastructure, or do we borrow and use our borrowings to fund our infrastructure and growth? So this indicates that we've used the majority of our, or 69% of our fund our margins to fund our growth, and this also indicates that we I mean, financially, could we could be okay to borrow more. Our goal is 57%, but we could increase our loan if we had to. And then the times interest earned ratio, CFC does not really use that, but a lot of other entities report that. That's basically just a modified margin ratio that tells us that we can meet our interest, make the interest payment on our long-term debt. So it's basically, if we had, I mean, it's a negative here because it's reporting for this month, but if it was 2.85, then we could take our margins for a year and make our interest only payments on our long-term debt for 2.85 years if we took just our margins to that. So, and again, one is just meets those those interest-only payments. Okay, connection fees were a little low in January. We had 11, valued at $12,496. Our current billing arrangements, residential customers, we have 53, valued at $11,678, and then two commercial billing arrangements at $899, and then our roundup program balances are displayed there in both valleys. This is the detail of our current loans held with CFC. Our last payment was due on December 31st, and it was made on time and paid in full, the $1.4 million. There, our total debt liability right now, our outstanding principal is $46,617,000. And our investment rate after discounts is 3.35. So this is the interest rate that we were given, and then part of this reduced interest rate comes into play with the equity as a percentage of assets. We receive a discount for that. We receive a discount as being an exclusive lender with CFC. And so those are the things that the discounts that we receive on our rate. So this is the breakdown of our cash revenue, or our revenue by customer class, and mainly reference for before and after because there's a lot going on here that's kind of small print, but we have it summarized on the next page here at the bottom. So just keep in mind that so January, again, we're just reporting January. Our monthly cost of power was 8.69 cents, and then our monthly revenue, 12.16 cents, and then again, our average cost is the same as the monthly cost of 8.69 cents.
So that's just the cost of power.
Kilowatt hour, yeah.
The other 3.5 cents went to everything else? Because we didn't make 4.5 cents, right? Or 4 cents, whatever that is.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, so the difference went to the our expenses. Is that where you're at?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Our additional expense, non-power cost. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Well, I just want to, having the bigger margin loss than we were anticipating, did you know how much of that was to do with the hydro layoff? And I feel like it was warmer than normal month. Our heater hardly ran.
Yeah.
Do you have a feel for why that margin was that much?
I didn't do an analysis on that, but I did research that this was the warmest January on record. I mean, last January 2024 was the prior warmest. I mean, it was a warmer month. And I don't know, like Melissa said, I don't know how much of the hydro that we did not purchase.
Do we know how much we projected to sell versus how much we sold?
Yeah, so we did project to sell or sell. So this number doesn't actually show the. So this is our total revenue that we projected, 4.8 million. We were around 300 below that, and part of that.
We don't know which percent is because we didn't sell power, and which percent is off the hydro loss.
So the hydro loss is not. It's not hundreds of thousands of dollars. But one of the things with the revenue is we're reporting that we had revenue of $300,000 less than what we budgeted. But if you look at revenue from energy sold, we anticipated that the rate increase would bring in another $500,000 to $600,000 a month, and it did. So the revenue from energy sold was in line with what we anticipated for the rate increase. One of the differences from 2024 and 2025 was that in 2024, we had a large billable job that was just over $200,000 that closed in that month. In January of 2025, we didn't have that job. That doesn't mean we're not going to have future billable jobs. It just means that we didn't have the same non-electric revenue in 25 that we had with 24. So there's multiple factors. There is expenses that have increased, one being labor. I think that also something that we see in January is that we have a lot of renewals for contracts or, you know, IT things that renew every single year. We have that every January, but those things are up a little bit. I think there's many, many factors. I don't think it's only that we didn't optimize and take every ounce of hydro that we could. That's a piece of the expense of the power cost being so high. But there's other factors with that as well.
All right, Michelle. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Could you send me email a copy of the report on the tier and all those things so I can study it a little more carefully?
I'll get to that.
Yeah. All right.
That's coming up as well.
Thanks, Jonathan. Melissa, why don't you go ahead and give us your report?
Okay. I attended a meeting with the BLM Fire Management Officer and his staff. NV Energy and then many of the CEOs from NREA were represented there. The purpose was to discuss the BLM's recent publication of permanent, I have to read this, I've practiced saying it about three times and I still fumble it, Permanent Instructional Memorandum, or they call them a PIM, 2025-003, and it is the routine operations and maintenance to reduce fire risk on electric utility right-of-ways and required fire prevention and control stipulations, and they call that a STIP. So the PIM establishes policies applicable to electric transmission and distribution right-of-ways, regarding routine operations and maintenance activities, including vegetation management and emergency activities to reduce the risk of wildfire. The group was introduced to a new employee. Her name is Melanie Oberhelm, and she has been assigned to a special detail in Nevada. She actually is based in Cedar City, but she is part of the Nevada State Office Planning Group, and she's working as a liaison between fire and land and realty. So as this group, we participated via Zoom, but Carolyn from NREA represented us in person, in NV Energy, and then the BLM were all in person. So Carolyn highlighted for the BLM the relative size of the member utilities, the NREA member utilities, and NV Energy. NV Energy employs more people in their lands department than most NREA utilities do as a whole. So she wanted the BLM to have that perspective when it comes to size and request. We have one BLM specialist at Overton Power, and NV Energy has multiple people in their lands department, and then they actually have somebody that works in the BLM office. So to help keep that perspective. She also helped us to address administrative uncertainty between the O&M plans and agreements, and then vague stipulation language, like ongoing concerns with post-ignition investigation, protocols including after-ignition interviews with employees, coming up to a fire and interviewing a lineman who's there trying to restore power, or even just the removal of assets, allowing assets to be removed or restored after. So there were many concerns, I'll say, with the language in these PIM and STIPs. The Nevada State Office assured us that they are interested in a pragmatic change, they called it, to expedite permitting and review the legacy right-of-way grants. We had an NREA member that we just celebrated at our meeting that received their permit after 6 years. So we call it our 10-year plan. That is the standard length of time that it takes to receive a permit. And so they are very keen on correcting that according to this specific meeting and that specific person. The next thing that we have that came from this meeting is that their leadership would like to have a meeting with the CEOs and the lawyers from each of these entities to review these and make red line changes to those stipulations and memorandums to make sure, first and foremost, for us, that we're represented. That rural, so much of things are dictated under NV Energy as being rural, yet all of the areas that we serve as NREA utilities is rural. So they've agreed that we will now have a monthly meeting. That meeting has not been scheduled, but they've agreed to it. So I'll be reaching out to Byron to help me participate in this next upcoming red line, which I'm sure will be a rip-roaring fun time, Byron. So, you know, get your Diet Coke and be ready. and I'll keep you guys notified on all of that. February 12th was Public Power Day at the Nevada Legislature. We started the day with an NREA board meeting. We discussed the 2025 best practices workshop that is going to be held in Las Vegas in mid-March. Carolyn, as you know, has submitted her resignation. So as a result of that, she needed to resign her seat on the NRECA, the national board. She has served as the representative for Nevada for a number of years. So the NREA board voted Kevin Robison, who is the general manager at Mount Wheeler, to serve on the NRECA board, and he will have that designation for 1 year, so that will go through March of 2026. And then Kevin represented NREA on a co-op board, the Western United board, so he vacated that seat, and the board voted Dane Bradfield from Lincoln County to take over that responsibility. Then we walked across the street to the legislative building where the real fun begins. Stephen, if you'll pull up my picture, please. Joining me at the legislature this year was Mike Young, Vernon, Kyle, and Randall. Randall and I had the privilege to sit on the Senate floor with Rochelle Wynn. Rochelle chairs the Senate Growth and Infrastructure Committee that deals with energy in our state. That pairing was quite advantageous to us, and we enjoyed a very good conversation with her. While we were on the Senate floor, Mike, Vernon, and Kyle met with Assemblyman Toby Urich. Assemblyman Urich has always been very responsive to our concerns. We work to and we'll continue to work to keep those communications lines with both he and his staff. He's very accessible to us. I was able to meet with the Senate Majority Leader, Nicole Cannizzaro, and you can see that in the bottom right corner, all of the CEOs that were in attendance met with her. And we reminded her, first off, about the permitting reform. Now, we know that BLM is on the federal level, but having state help helps. And so we discussed that with her. We also ask that she be made very aware that we appear to have a much smaller voice in the legislature than NV Energy, but that does not negate the importance of the communities that we serve and how seriously we take serving those communities. And she was very responsive to that. And then we talked to her about what an important role hydropower plays in both our ability to serve our communities and for a reliability standpoint, but also from a cost standpoint. While I was doing that, Randall and Vernon met with Senator Jeff Stone, and they echoed those same sentiments. Vernon, I know we had other messages, and I'm drawing a blank. Help me out. What else did we talk to them about?
We brought up a recent occurrence when federal grant funding that was supposed to be going to rural areas ended up kind of diverting away from the rural utilities, and the suggestion, I guess, was that maybe the NREA or some other rural representation should be on those deciding with the governor's office of energy.
Yeah.
In doing those.
Thank you.
And he was very interested in that and asked us to follow up with him, which we've done.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you. This year was a little bit different format for us for Public Power Day. They remodeled a big meeting room right on the third floor of the legislative building, and we were able to reserve that. So normally we are given assignments and we go in small groups and meet with different legislators at different times. We still did that on some, but then we had this room that was centrally located, which allowed for the rest of us that didn't have a meeting time to be in there, and then the legislators came to us. So I want to tell you just a few of the takeaways that I got from there, because I wish I could have recorded it. It was so entertaining. Steve Yeager, who is the Speaker of the Assembly, he was our first speaker, and he came in and talked to us about how well there truly is bipartisanship in the state of Nevada, that they really do work really well together, but it's very rarely portrayed that way because people getting along doesn't sell newspapers or ad space on the news. So he just reminded us that every once in a while they have a slight disagreement, but for the most part they get along. When we were preparing for this day, one of the things that we were instructed is that if you are a Democrat, you are referred to as an assembly member. If you are a Republican, you are an assemblyman or an assemblywoman. And so we were to make that designation. I may or may not have slipped a few times, purely on accident. let me think who else came in. Okay. Howard Watts, he is the majority whip for this assembly, and he came in and gave gave a talk, I'll just say that. He gave a talk on the value of solar and how great solar is for our state and for the energy market. Now, one thing that we do have to say about Mr. Watts is that he is helping with a bill that was initially put forward by Valley Electric that NREA is now in support of, and that is for station power. And this bill would make it required that any solar development that is located in your service territory must purchase all station or what we call backfeed power from the entity where it is located. So he is working on that. Before he could leave the room, Senator Ira Hansen came to the front of the room, and he is up in the top right corner. You can see he with Randall and I, and he has a very loud voice. He did not need the microphone, but he used it. And he proceeded to educate everybody in the room on how expensive solar is, that if you look at solar independently, as a piece of your portfolio, it is absolutely cheaper than fossil fuels. But he reminded everybody in the room, who were all, you know, from our industry, that the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow. And what do we need to have as backup? Fossil fuels! So, it was very entertaining. At one point, I looked like through my peripheral vision and I saw Howard Watts exiting the room. So he was about 10 minutes into his talk, and Assemblywoman, I forget her, is it Alexis Hansen, who is actually Ira Hansen's wife, could hear him down the hall, and in she came. And she, you know, very sweetly removed the microphone from his hand, and then we had a wonderful talk with her. She was very engaging. She went around with the microphone and asked, who has questions? What can I help with? What? Give me your concerns. And at the end, she said, send me a list. Send me a list of things that I should be on my radar, of conversations that you feel you should be represented in as a rural utility. And then also, if you have questions, concerns, or problems that you think I could help with, even if it's just getting you in touch with somebody else, send them to me. So we had a very good conversation with her. And Ira, you know, he is a senator and she is an assemblywoman, but he stood at attention when his wife came to take that microphone, which I found very cute. So finally, we listened, we had a talk with Assemblywoman Lisa Cole, and then we finished the day with Greg Hafen. And Greg was a really enjoyable talk. Of every member of the Assembly and the Senate, he is the one person in both of those buildings that is served by a co-op. The only one. Every other representative in the state is served by an IOU. He's the only one, and he's from Pahrump. And his grandfather helped start Valley Electric Co-op. So he had some very entertaining stories, and he was, of course, very easy for us to give our message back to. So that was good. There was a winter storm warning that was starting at 10 o'clock that night, and so we all made the decision to hotfoot it back across the state. We got home in the wee hours of the morning, but on dry roads, and nobody struck any animals going at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning out across the desert, so we consider that a win.
And going the speed limit, I'm sure.
Oh, the speed limit. Oh.
I know I did. Thursday morning, the day after, I participated in the final round of interviews for the executive director for NREA. We had three very good candidates. All gave very good interviews. That was a long day of interviews, but they made an offer to, her name is Lisa Levine, and she is someone that I think NREA will absolutely benefit from. I think we are all going to enjoy working with her, and I am very excited about the future of NREA under her leadership. I have two last things. I've continued talks with the two large solar developments that we have in our service territory that are currently receiving their station power from NV Energy. I have been in negotiations with NV Energy and with the help of Tenaska working on that. We're making some good headway. Kevin has been working with me diligently on receiving all of the metering data, and NV Energy has been quite easy to work with on this. So I am hopeful that I can bring you a contract for those customers in March, possibly April, by the time we get everything dialed in. But I will be working with Byron closely on getting those contracts done, and then we'll be bringing those before you. And then the last thing I wanted to just give you guys an update is CFC has confirmed the dates for us for strategic planning of August 5th and 6th. Becky has been doing research on locations, and we will have that dialed in soon. But one of the things that we are working towards is finding something that is within an hour and a half drive so that when the day gets done, everybody can get home. We don't have a long way to go. We realize that it's very hot in Southern Nevada on August 5th and 6th, but we're going to try to stay close to home. And I really feel that it is vital that everyone attends. So please put August 5th and 6th on your calendar, and we'll give you more information coming soon. And that's my report, unless you guys have more questions for me.
Thank you.
Is there any, I've heard about a lot of government cuts of employees, people being fired. Is that going to affect, like you were talking about the BLM permitting taking forever? Did they clean some of that up?
Are you going to talk about that as a leader, or you want me to talk about it now?
Well, I'm going to talk about some of it, but I'm not going to talk about BLM. So if you have some insight on BLM, go ahead.
The answer to that is yes.
It's going to make it worse or better?
Yes. It's going to make it worse. We have, I've seen a number of agencies, you know, that are LinkedIn is blowing up with people saying, I've lost 10 people from my staff and they're good people. If you know of anything, reach out. I'll talk to you about them. I've seen the national parks in our areas like Grace Basin National Park has been putting out saying, we can no longer do the tours at Lehman Caves because the staff that we had, we no longer have. So I think absolutely we're going to feel that in many areas, but with agencies we work with, absolutely.
And part of the problem here, and we've been talking to our legislators about this for years, is the environmental groups and other legislators put all of these requirements on BLM permits, and they really don't have the staffing to do the work that they're asked to do. And if they cut the staffing, it's just going to make the lead times just unbelievably worse. What they really need to do is they also, if they're going to cut staff, they also need to cut the requirements that they have to do. But that's not part of the discussion yet. Okay, Jack, we need you to come up here front and center, if you would, please. Come up here.
I'm coming.
The press.
Can you get a picture for us?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Jack Nelson, I present to you your gold director's gold certificate.
Woo-hoo! Well,
yay! Hello
to your brother.
Becky, can you scoot back just a little? Thank you.
Not that we don't love you, Becky.
Thank
now
you.
Now we'll expect more and greater things from you.
Except I need the certificate back.
This is just like your paycheck when you get home. Hope you enjoyed
it. Yeah, it comes and goes.
Thank you.
Till Mike gets it straightened out.
So the first thing I wanted to report to you that we've been talking for a number of months about the mine project that is designed to go by the I-15 interchange going into Overton and Logandale. For us, what about a 20 megawatt load potentially?
Yeah, or a little bit larger.
So I understand that they have purchased the property in Moapa, and they're holding in Moapa a town board meeting. That is scheduled for Monday the 24th at 6 p.m. at the Moapa Rec Center. So I don't know if those guys will be burned at the stake or whatever. We'll have to go see what happens as they talk to the good folks in Moapa.
Don't they have to get a BLM permit?
No, it's private land. Are they including any BLM?
Yeah, all of that mine is BLM, and they've worked on getting the permit to do that.
Okay.
I thought it was private.
Yeah.
Something like that. They purchased private land for their
plant.
The mining will be different.
Yeah, the map I saw looked like most of it was private, but so it's good mix of.
Yeah, it's most of the mine is, in fact, all the mine is BLM.
Okay.
But as we've learned with the town boards, they're going to have this meeting, but they really don't have any authority or power whatsoever. And the whole town could show up and say no.
And they will.
The county will do whatever they want to do, unless the town can convince the county officials to change their minds. With what we see, what the county would like to see the growth in Moapa, the chances of that.
Okay, so Elisa talked a little bit about the NREA search. I've been really involved in that since the first of the year. And I sat in on the entire, well, I put together the process, put together the timeline. It was designed to coincide with the Public Power Day so we could wrap that up. And the design was not to just have it wrapped up for those guys, but to have it wrapped up for me, too. So now I'm done with that. So the only thing that's left will be the onboarding process. And the way that I presented that to the NREA executive committee was for them to do the training and the onboarding. So we'll see if they stick to that, but I haven't received when the start date is for the new executive director or when that onboarding process will occur, but those will be the remaining steps. I know that that Lisa is designed to be part of be on board and be part of the best practices by the end of the of March, so she'll start sometime between now and those last couple weeks in March. So,
and just when does Carolyn leave?
She leaves April 1st.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. So she'll take care of best practices, kind of walk Lisa through everything that goes on there, and then that will be her last hurrah. Just a little follow-up on the legislature. I sat in on the NREA legislative update on Friday. The first bill that was passed in the legislature and everybody was in harmony was the eggs bill. Oh, so they approved
heard that on the Senate floor.
They approved that so that they can sell B grade eggs, which are not necessarily uniformly shaped and the same color. So
non-free range.
So. Melissa talked about the station power bill. Carolyn feels like sometime during this legislative session that we'll probably see NV Energy introduce a wildfire liability bill. Their liability exposure is just tremendous, and so there is nothing that is being talked about openly yet, but we anticipate that as we get close to the end of the session, kind of similar to what we've seen the last couple, that all of a sudden this will pop up and it will fly through and get done. So that's kind of the track that it's on so far. And Carolyn gave a presentation to the Senate Growth and Infrastructure Committee, and that was very well received. So I appreciate what she did and what these guys did as they made their visits and visited our legislators. While they were at the Nevada Power Day, I was at CRETA meetings, and there's a couple things that we need to talk about. Jack, this will come to your question. Bob, also one of your questions. Our water year so far is 80% of normal. Now, last year, for example, we were about 110% of normal, but we didn't get even 100% of the runoff because the ground was so dry that a lot of that moisture was either evaporated or soaked into the ground before it even got into the river. So this year, with it being even drier, unless we get a lot of storms that come through in that upper basin area between now and mid-April, we're going to see less than 80% runoff from water this year. Now, at the CRETA meeting, we talked with the Bureau of Reclamation people, and they feel like that the water levels at Lake Powell are good enough to survive this year without any cutbacks. But they said if this drought again continues like it is into next year, that it's likely that in 2026 they will probably have to drop into another shortage criteria unless the situation changes. So,
did we ever come out of the last, like we went through one shortage already, I believe.
Yeah, we did. We went down into a shortage criteria at Lake Powell. The elevation is 30.25. We actually got down to 30.19. But last year it got up to 3.75, so we got out of that criteria again. And now I think the elevation is somewhere around 3.50, just under that in the 3.40s. So they think that we're going to be good for this summer, but next year could pose a challenge. Now, on the Lake Mead side, you've probably read the reports coming out. Lake Mead has been fairly stable. We're gonna see it come down. The shortage criteria there is elevation 1050. I haven't seen a prediction on that yet. I don't know if we're going to hit that this summer. I doubt it. but it's likely to come in 2026 as well, and that's when we'll see some cutbacks. Now, the other thing that you've probably seen is they've done some studies on the turbines at Hoover, and they feel like that once you get down to, before they were saying that they could generate electricity down to elevation 900, but after this study, they said that at elevation 1035, there's going to be a severe drop-off in the production at Hoover, that it would go from, I believe now it's about 3,000 megawatts, it could drop down to 300 megawatts at elevation 1035. So what the problem is here is they went through and they replaced some of the turbines and put low head pressure turbines in there, but they didn't do all of them, and they stopped the process. Now they're ramping up that process, trying to upgrade turbines between now and then, but I think the best we can hope for is they can maybe do two turbines in that time frame. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of help from their work. So pray for rain. That's what it's going to take. One of the big things that we've talked about at CRETA for a number of years is when they built the Glen Canyon Dam, it comes out of the dam and it makes a turn in the canyon. Just after that turn, a slough formed in there. A bunch of water or a bunch of silt piled up in that area around the corner, and it produced a little bit of a slough where just a trickle of water comes through. It's mostly water that goes around and then kind of backfills. That has become a really bad spot because it's been a place where non-native species can get in there and they've habitated there and they've become a problem. We've worked for years trying to get that slough removed, and the environmental groups and the National Park Service have fought us the whole way. Finally, the Park Service has agreed to let the Bureau of Reclamation go in and remove that hump in there, that landmass, and let the water run through so that slough can wash through and eliminate the Arizona green sunfish and the other non-native species that are in there. So they're going to start probably in March, sometime in March they are going to put a dredge operation on a barge. They're going to float it to that area, and they hope to have that done before summertime. So they're anticipating a month or 6 weeks of work to get that dredge in there and get it dredged out and get that taken care of. If the first time that I went there on a CRETA trip, if I would have had a shovel, I could have had water running through there in about an hour. But like I say, Park Service let a small problem turn into a big problem, and now they're going to have to dredge it out. So we'll get that taken care of and get that part cleaned up and go on to other matters like the smallmouth bass. We'll be back to that again. Now, we did have a long discussion with the Bureau of Reclamation and WAPA. At every CRETA meeting, we have three or four people from Bureau of Reclamation and usually two to four people from WAPA that attend our meeting, give us an update of what's going on. Between those two organizations, they are going to lose 300 people through layoffs. Now, if you've read about these layoffs, they said that they're going to start with the probationary people. The problem is any federal government job, if you get a promotion and you start a new function, you are on probation. So, for example, the gentleman that was at our meeting is the head of the Colorado River Storage Project. He took over that job 6 months ago. He is now in line to be terminated. And why they are doing this is beyond me. The Bureau of Reclamation is scheduled to lose 25 engineers, about 50 linemen, at least a dozen plant operators, controllers, supporting people. I don't know how they're going to continue to operate the dams without these people. The sad thing about this is they're doing this to eliminate government jobs, and what they're not stopping to think about is the government pays their wages, and then the Colorado River power users repay the government for those wages that they've paid out. So in essence, it's not costing the federal government anything for those employees. We're paying the cost. And so we're going to see them cut essential people. And the frustrating thing is we're not seeing them cut any fish biologists or anything like that. It's all people that are needed to run and operate the dams and to run the power operations.
That's shocking. I assumed that it would be all the biologists and that kind of stuff.
But I haven't seen one of those people on the list.
It's like the Department of Education, they contracted all the researchers that was costing almost $1 billion and things like that. So
yeah.
Hopefully that comes, that part.
Well, I'm hoping so. There, you know, the folks from WAPA had a meeting with the Department of Energy right after our meeting, so I don't know what they talked about in that meeting. That was after ours, but they're continuing to work on this. But if they go as is, it's really not good for the power system. It's a real concern. So we're going to have to watch and wait and see what happens. There haven't been layoffs yet, but they're continuing to work on that. And that's my report, unless you have some questions for me. Okay, thank you.
Well, you never really said, so could the hydro go away then if it's the Deadpool kind of area?
When it gets down to 1035, we will get very little out of Hoover Dam. Okay. And we will still be getting some from Parker Davis and from the Glen Canyon Dam. But Hoover is going to be really threatened next year if the water elevations don't increase.
And our only possibility for replacing that is with market power. We don't have another, we don't have another hydro allocation someplace that we can draw on, or another solar plant that's just waiting to.
Well, the problem is we're looking at about 20% solar right now, and we've Randall's worked with our engineers to do a study, and they say, hey, 20-25% is about in the range where you want to be for solar. You don't want to go higher than that, because then we have to start doing batteries and things like that. And the problem with batteries is, first of all, they're not operating the way that they're being sold, that it's not functioning quite to that level. And the second thing is, if we were to purchase enough batteries to get us, for example, through the night when the solar isn't available, it would cost us over $400 million. And then those batteries last 10 years. So every 10 years, you would have to pump out $400 million just to keep the batteries going, just to back up the solar. And so there is no renewable solution that really works in this case.
What percent of our power is the hydro?
It's roughly about 20%, 20% for hydro and 20% for solar.
How much of that is Hoover?
The Hoover is the large portion of that. It's about 15%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so replacing the Crisp or the Parker Davis is a lot easier than replacing the Hoover.
How many cents is it? How much does it cost?
$24 a megawatt.
Yeah, and each project has a different cost. Hoover's the cheapest resource, too.
Well, let's go to item H, review and possible approval of OPD scholarship policy, creation of subcommittees to award 2025 scholarships.
So we go through this policy every year. I did make some minor changes. I changed district to OPD-5. In the policy, and that's all I did. So now it's up to you guys to decide how many awards that you want to give, if any, and who's going to be on the committees. Last year, what did we do? Eight $1,000 scholarships in each valley. And who was on the committee last year?
Me and Dale.
You and Dale, and then Judy and Jack, were you on it?
I think it was
Rich, were you on it? Was it just Judy? It was Judy and Jeff.
I can't be on it because I'm on the committee. That
yeah, it was Judy and
you
Jeff.
Gotta pick your battles, Rich.
Yeah, it was Judy and I. Discussion.
Sure, Randy would love to have an opportunity.
I'll do it.
And Dale's not here, so.
Are you still thinking 8-8 or financially?
No, for discussion.
Is it budgeted? Have we budgeted?
Yeah, we budgeted 8 scholarships at each. Yeah, so 16 total.
Is that where you want to stay? Crickets, crickets.
Actually, of course, I'm against it. I believe our intern program is much more effective because it provides us potential employees and an ability to evaluate them. I do like the part that we put in about technical schools, and I think we're giving scholarships for academic excellence, but we should be giving them for technical potential technical people. And if we're going to do this, I would hope that we would instruct our delegates to be very open to selecting some technical candidates to get these scholarships and not academic A-plus students, because they're not going to come back. I mean, you're giving money away. Yes, it supports a lot of local families, perhaps, but I think for the good of our company, technical experts are more important, and the good of the community too, and they're much more likely to stay. So, I
would probably split the difference on that. I think I have a son right now that's in Dixie Tech mechanic program, which is kind of what you're doing, but at the same time, with the valley's growing, I think you see more engineering jobs, you see more technical jobs coming in, whether it's software, computers, whatever. So I think it's a 50-50 split. I don't think it's really one way or the other. I actually believe the tech schools in the next 5 to 10 years are going to outpace that. So I think that is going to be a self-correction anyway.
We kind of looked at those last year just as well. Did anybody get them from a technical school? Do you remember, or just offhand?
I don't recall one that was, of course, I didn't know I didn't recognize all the names well enough, but I didn't sense that there was anybody going to the tech school.
So Mike, are you saying that, eight versus what, 4 go to a college and 4 to a tech school?
No, I just want to look at them.
Look at
just
both. Just be aware of it.
Yeah, and I would
As you go
through those packets, it's like, there's a lot of good, smart people.
Sure.
But that is a good idea, Mike.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to say 4 and 4. I think you need to just keep it in mind. Say, hey, this is really important to support the technical part of the education here, as opposed to just scholarship solid A's or something.
Sure, you know, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, they may have A's in the technical school too, I don't know, but that's
just be diverse.
Yeah.
When I notify the schools, I can put an emphasis on technical schools.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the technical people don't quite have as good a grade, so as good as 3.0 and above.
So you want to say with 8 and 8?
I'm against the program altogether.
So but don't ask Mike.
But anyway, that's just my suggestion to the committee members.
That's good.
Jack and Chad.
Chad,
yeah. Well, I'll make a motion that we award 8 scholarships in Virgin Valley and in Moapa Valley for $1,000 each, and appoint Jack and Chad. Moapa Valley. And who are our representatives?
It's
going to be Randy,
and
Todd. Should be me.
Bob.
That's my person now.
Randy and Bob.
Randy and Bob, okay.
He was on it last year.
Okay.
He was.
He's pretty busy right now.
He's busy.
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Okay.
Second.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dale?
Give Dale's phone.
Okay.
He's quiet.
Anybody who oppose?
Yay.
I got you.
Okay. Very good. Let's go on to I, renew and approval of OPD training and policy, OPD for possible action.
So I've been going through our policy book and looking at policies that haven't been looked at. This policy was last looked at in 2009.
Whoa.
Yeah, we have a couple more of those to go. So as I look through this, it didn't say a whole lot. And in the second, I thought it was a little bit confusing as to, you know, we have an education policy where we support people taking college classes, college credits. And this is geared more toward training and education from the seminar and more industry-provided training opportunities. So I went through and I tried to tweak it that direction so you can see that I've included a lot of new things in here. I don't know if there's anything too earth-shattering, really. I just tried to just clarify some things to make sure that, you know, one of the controversial things is sometimes we have training classes that might go 5 days, and we typically work a 4 or 10 hour schedule. And if we have a person that doesn't want to go to a five day training, okay, fine, you can opt out, you know, but you miss that opportunity, but that's their choice. We're not going to pay them overtime to go, and so that's why I did that. I think everything else in here is pretty straightforward.
So does it address anything about board members education training? No, just strictly employees.
Strictly employees. Okay. Yeah, this is in the employee section. So, board members, you guys control your training.
Same,
yeah. So,
good.
So,
we get paid
yeah.
The same.
You know, this is kind of an interesting situation. It doesn't actually say that we will provide your training like once every couple of years or something. It forced the management to send people.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes you just, I don't know, they didn't say anything about going. But maybe some kind of thought about that every employee will have the opportunity each year to attend a class or something.
So let's go down to C and let's look at this. It says, supervisors should discuss their training plans and goals with employees at least annually.
Yeah.
And a supervisor may ask an employee to participate in training, or an employee may request to attend certain training. Would you like to change that somehow to say, it says annually in there.
Yeah, it says review it annually.
And we encourage our managers to ensure that supervisors are getting supervisory level training, but then they're also sending their staff to training, and that could be either
cool.
In person or via Zoom. And we've talked about how difficult some of those classes are, but I'm hesitant for us to write a policy that requires every
right.
employee, because some of us may have just had a new baby, and we don't want to go anywhere for the first 2 years. We don't want to do any traveling because our personal life doesn't dictate to that.
But your men won't have a new baby. Oh, they may have a baby.
They may. They may. Their wife could have a new baby, and their wife says you ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
So
my wife's already had to talk to me about that.
But I really agree with what you're saying. It's more, I guess, a push by management.
Yes.
Say, hey, listen.
Yeah.
You haven't been to a training, but I really think this would be good for you.
Yeah.
And as opposed to requiring
it
after 15 years, maybe, and it sounds like you do this.
Yes. Yeah, we encourage it, but we don't require
you do. Okay.
It. We encourage it, we don't require it. And that's why I would be hesitant to have the policy require us
that's
to require people to go.
Yeah, it's not a good, but at least you have annually review the training needs.
That's
yeah.
Yeah, so the supervisor discusses with the person, and the two of them decide what
Okay. And as you saw from the report, the number of people that are doing the training is really high every month.
So I didn't see that.
That's the cyber training. Yeah, the cyber training. For
example. But also the attendance of safety meeting.
Yeah, safety meetings is really high. That's all considered training. Yeah. And then number four is kind of the teeth, that if someone chooses not to do failure to attend and participate in required training may be considered an inexcusable neglect of duty in accordance with OPD 5 disciplinary procedure.
Okay. Well,
so if we try to get you education and you refuse to go, I think there's a few things
maybe
that we need to assess with you. But this is one of those, right? I mean, if you're refusing to continue.
Has that ever happened before?
Yes, we have. We've had instances, for example, at a safety meeting where somebody, or we've had employees say, I refuse to go to safety meeting.
Oh, man.
And
did you buy lunch, or what was it do?
No,
I'm just kidding.
That's good.
Yeah.
Arcane does that.
Oh, just
kidding. So,
I just never really heard. Even in like the city type stuff, and we do a lot of trainings there. I very rarely do you hear anybody that doesn't at least initiate a safety meeting or some type of training.
It's been rare, but we've had
really?
Cases, and that's why I wanted to put this in here. That you know, there are certain things like first aid and. And you know, some other things
mandatory.
Like that they need to be there. If we're doing ladder safety and they miss that one, okay, maybe we can, you know, excuse that. But there's the other training they have to be.
Yeah, mandatory and then encouraged.
Encouraged.
Are there certain certifications that, like, linesmen, are they required to have CPR or certain certifications? And that would be taken care of with that.
Yeah. So we require people to be at a safety meeting. We require them to go to, for example, workplace violence and sexual harassment training. Mm-hmm. So those are three that come top of mind that, not how to, Rich. I could see that smile.
How to climb a ladder?
How to do CPR?
Yeah. So there are some that we want to make mandatory. And when we send out an email, we say mandatory training. But right now, we don't have any way to say
if you don't go,
this is what happens to you.
This will adequately address that, though. You feel like?
Yeah, Ford helps. It puts every employee on notice that if there's a required training and they refuse to do it, it can be considered an inexcusable neglect of duty, and they can be disciplined appropriately. And that can go as far as being fired.
Now, would those trainings be specific to job? I mean, there's going to be a lot of trainings that don't, for Becky versus Kyle, XYZ. I mean,
CPR, sexual harassment, and those are everywhere.
Mandatory.
But you're right. There are certain things, like, for example, the people that work on the front desk go to Red Flags training every year. And so for them, that's mandatory.
It's separate, yeah.
Yeah, that's separate. So, yeah, we'll break that
kind
up.
Dissect that up a little bit.
Yeah.
And employees get to take college courses on their own, and we reimburse a big portion of that to them.
Yeah.
I'll make a movement that we accept the policy changes as given to us here in this presentation.
I got what you said.
Second.
I know what you said.
Very good. Second.
Training. Okay, we got a second from Mr. Young. Everybody in favor say aye.
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 Dale?
And I forgot to mention, Byron reviewed that after and helped me tweak a couple of things, so I appreciated Byron's input there, too. So I should have said that up front.
Any opposed? All right, excellent. All right. Any public comment?
Nope.
We got one more.
One more guy.
Oh. You're anxious.
Come on, don't leave me from hanging.
Okay.
Yes, it's all about
review and possible approval of. Oh! Yeah. Sorry, Byron, you brought it up, huh? Review and possible approval of OPD legal services policy, possible action.
So, again, this was last reviewed in 2008. And I didn't think there was a lot of meat in this one either. So I made some changes here, but I also sent this to Byron to have this reviewed. I went through the NRECA books that where we get training and looked at some other things. I kind of fumbled my way through it and then had Byron clean this up. But we've added some more specifics in here. We've added some clarity in here a little bit. You can see that purple part in here about how council reports to the board as a whole, works with the president, but the firm does not represent any individuals. It represents the company. So we just clarified some things like that. I also added in there that the, you know, in the NRECA stuff, it says, you know, you may want to have your attorney attend board meetings. I made it a requirement. So we want to hold him to higher standards. So.
Wonderful. I'm here. I love you.
Better be. We signed this.
So I just had a quick question, just because I'm on the water board, they do things slightly different. Do you guys, on professional services, do you have the RFPs for this kind of stuff as far as, I know Byron's been around a long time.
Forever.
Dirt, right? Do you guys ever do RFPs for professional services?
To keep it
kind of in that whole frame of...
We do those on occasion, but we found that when we change professional services, that our level of training that we have to give goes up. And so we like to hold on to professional services just because they're so limited around in our areas that we want to keep them as long as we can.
Well, the only reason I asked that question is we went through the water district, kind of a similar thing, and we ended up going out for RFP for services. I think it was actually a legal firm and an engineering firm and an accounting firm, actually. And we try to make it a thing to every 3 to 5 years, you put that out for bid and see how that comes back just for... I mean, there's other businesses in town, not anything away from Byron, but as a community, there are other businesses in town that may want a shot at that.
Mm-hmm. We do RFPs for engineering every few years.
And for audit. That.
So every 3 years you put out RFP for engineering services?
Yeah, well, even on certain jobs.
And accounting services?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I was just curious how that works.
I can appreciate the fact that somebody else wants an opportunity, but... I haven't been willing to train them so they can get that opportunity.
Well, you're leaving it. No, I'm just curious how it all works here. Water district's slightly different.
You know, we face that with our auditors. We put out an RFP for auditors, but we found that whenever we've changed auditors, the learning curve is tremendous, and we spend...
Well, I think that's why you do a 3 to 5 year turnaround.
Well, the thing is, we spend 3 years training them, and then we send out an RFP, and we get somebody different, then we spend 3 years training them.
Well, I look at it slightly different, because there's other businesses in town, whether it's engineering or whatever the case may be, that may want to crack at that. How do you not give them an opportunity to do that if you never put an RFP out? Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's, you know, I don't care if it's attorney or accounting or engineering, whatever the case may be. I've done that through the city and the water district, and... And you're right. Sometimes it's more painstaking than maybe it's worth. But as far as communities-wide goes, with small businesses and different things out there, something might be thinking about. I don't know.
Well, the attorney's hired by the board, so it's up to you guys.
It's really not about the legal thing. It's just the general professional services.
I think your point is done by the board. But I think somehow we need to be able to get it on our agenda. Consider it like every 3 years. Are we satisfied with our legal services? Are we satisfied with this engineering firm or whatever
the case may be?
And shall we send out it or are we going to continue?
Is legal services kind of the only one that we're not? I'm trying to think of, it seems like
yes.
Tree guys, all these other guys.
Yeah, we do most of the others.
We talk about them on a...
If not all of them, yeah.
But we also can hire outside legal services.
Yes.
And we did this year. Right. And we did this year. We've brought in other legal services.
I mean, I think that has to be critical.
Yeah. And you do the same with the engineering, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
I think as we enter into these contracts with these large power entities, you know, we may have to hire someone who specializes.
Sure.
in those power contracts. Byron's still here to help us find those individuals. But, you know, as we, you know, with 20, 50, 100 megawatt entities, we're going to want to make sure that we have those contracts in our favor.
Well, we do the same thing in the water district. We end up hiring the Hutchinson firm out of Las Vegas, you know, to help out with those issues. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I'm just curious.
We do hire additional, and we've had multiple times. We've hired a FERC specialist. We recently hired somebody that was a specialist in the consent and agreement that we were doing for Estuary. But then Byron works in conjunction with them and represents the board in all of those conversations. So we haven't put out an RFP for his specific role with the board, but I caution that the institutional knowledge that Byron would leave with if we were to replace him is saving money would not be worth it. I'll say that. So I'm not against putting out an RFP. I understand where you're coming from.
I also think a different set of eyes sometimes bring you a different vision too. Not necessarily in this case, but I have seen that in the past as well. Mm-hmm. So once you get in this same system every time, you kind of don't see the outside as much.
Mm-hmm. The problem is the 318 district, there are just not that many of them.
Right.
And it's just a unique animal.
So a few years ago, Lincoln changed attorneys, and I've heard all about the process they went through and the problems that they went through, and I've been hesitant to go through those myself.
Well, I think the learning curve, like you're saying, is probably doesn't match out because, you know, he knows probably more than most of the board members.
But
at the same time, it's just trying to be customary and fair with the community-wide.
I see what you're saying.
And I think for a certain period of time, the board needs to review mm-hmm. our satisfaction with the attorney or anybody.
I mean, option.
Privately, we sit there and say, okay, and we maybe call you guys in and say, well, do you give us your opinion and get out of the room, and then we'll discuss it.
I think I would be more than happy to volunteer me, Lisa, to do that.
Hey, you agree.
The only other question I would have is, and through the water district, again, just because that's what I know, we had an attorney there that was, how do I say it, was representing us and another entity, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
That was
a conflict.
How does that happen? Because I
can't, shouldn't, right?
Well,
that should never happen.
Well, I don't know how that works, and obviously there were some issues there, so they had a lot of issues going on over there. Is there any conflicts that we're aware of?
Well, that was one thing that's in the policy.
My name doesn't show up anywhere in this policy. This is strictly
whoever
your legal counsel is, and legal counsel is at your whim. You can have me disappear tomorrow. You can hire a firm. You can do whatever you guys want. This isn't my contract. This is a contract in general for legal counsel.
I know I've had that before. I think it maybe was with the water district or something. We were doing something. And Byron,
I stepped out.
He's like, hey, I represent both.
Well, it's like anything that comes up at the board. Sometimes we have to, you know, step back from the vote.
Right.
The same thing.
Yeah, that's the only one that I can recall anytime soon was when we were selling the building. Or the land. We were buying the land and building, things like that with Water District. That would be my only conflict, because I represent the Water District. Yeah. That's the only conflict I have.
Just try to, you know.
Okay, I'll move that we approve the policy on legal services. Doesn't have regulation OPDA 03.101.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Everybody in favor of the adoption of the legal services draft here, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Now
is the time.
Public comments. Chris, did you have a public comment? I thought you raised your hand.
No, I put my glasses on.
Oh! Any
now this guy's not even public anymore.
We brought him over to the dark side.
Any trustee comments?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. A couple of them. One, of course, I attended the meeting in Carson City, and I thought it was extremely valuable. It's very important that we go and participate fully. Yeah, I mean, this, although there was nothing critical at this moment, the fact is establishing those relationships will be well worth it later when there is something big come up because we're going to need it. And I agree with your comments, Melissa, that some of the people were quite entertaining.
Now, if you're bad, this is Mr. Watts.
He was quite entertaining, to me, to say the least. But we made some good contacts, and our general manager and staff really represented us well. They moved in the circles and they chatted with people and really made some inroads. Even though they didn't come to our meeting, we went to some of their offices, gave them a little pin, thank you so much. And sometimes you're just talking to the secretary, but sometimes the secretary is more important than the person who has the office. So, and give them our
we found that Becky's over there. Yep.
We found that with staff members back in D.C.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, everyone's driving the ship.
Yeah.
And that's right. That's why the bureaucrats are controlling our government, right?
Correct. Yeah. You are correct.
It was really good. Our representatives, Jeff Stone, talking to him and getting some input. And again, we didn't have anything to push at the time, but we made those important contacts that will be important one day, I think. So really need to make sure we have that on our agenda each year to participate as much as we fully can. And they don't know necessarily that you're a trustee or a board member or staff, but it's important to have some bodies there that will speak to them and communicate and smile a lot, because they know, oh yeah, our guys, they were here. And if two or three showed up, it would be nothing, but there was quite a few people. It was new that we spoke to the people directly. Now a lot of them came into the room, and I thought we were a little unprepared for that, because some asked, are there any questions? Not a sound came out for some time. But we know that in the future we can have some prepared for us to make sure they're asked. I thought that was really important. And the other thing I was going to mention and brought it up is board training. I think that it's extremely important that our board members, if possible, attend these classes, because he just got his big award, a gold award, and he finally knows something to do, you know? But it is important, because you think you know it, and you don't. When I went there, the finances, the ethics, how to select a GM, how to compensate them, and all those sorts of things that you think, oh, it just comes, but, and how to win the board over to your point of view. I haven't quite won that one yet. But I attended the class. And in addition to that, I think it's important that when we do these classes, we take 3 or 4 minutes in a board meeting to tell the other board members who were unable to go what the heck you learned. And I know I was looking through some of my other things. I had a whole bunch of notes, and I never said that to anybody. And I think that sharing what you got out of it as a board member is extremely important. And so I'd like to make sure that board members hopefully will be able to do that, because if we're going to go to some classes in Atlanta, it costs a lot of money. So I think getting full value for all the board members is important, because some are unable to go, but we can share those that are critical to our operation here, the right things, and give people some insights that we got out of it. So that's it, buddy.
Okay, very good. Well said. Approval of next board meeting, Wednesday, March 19th, 3 o'clock in the Overton facility.
Yes, Mike, Overton.
Make a motion that we have our next board meeting be Wednesday, March 19th, 3 p.m. at the Overton boardroom.
What did you need to tell them?
Second.
Opposite.
Second. Everybody in favor of the next meeting, March 19th, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Can I back up? Who seconded that? I'm sorry.
Randy.
Randy, okay.
Mr. Lobb.
Thank you. I did have a quick announcement.
Oh.
Randy, we heard you. We have given the board members access to the board meeting information. It went out this afternoon. So you should have an email with a link to be able to get into the board documents that were presented tonight. And now you have access all the time. You'll have all the months. You'll be able to. So if you bring a laptop or something with you, you will be able to pull it up.
And that includes the visuals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All the reports are in there. And then also we will be sharing the policy manual. So I won't send you a separate email every time a policy is approved. I will update the manual and you'll have access to that. You should get a link tomorrow.
Very good.
Okay?
Okay. Executive session?
No.
Oh. Well, hallelujah, brother. Good things happen. I move we adjourn. Been proposed that we adjourn. It's been a second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Opposed.
Good meeting, everybody.
Thanks.
Jack, you would have absolutely loved when we were on.